Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in
2 hours a week.
Tune in to Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Heather Wagenhals. She'll show you how without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhals.
Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals Unlock Your Wealth Radio this fabulous Saturday, June 27th. We are broadcasting from none other than the ancient city of Xi'an in China. I'm so excited to be bringing you this broadcast right outside of the exhibit of the Terracotta Warriors. As we take this summer of savings on the road, so to speak, as we travel around, we are almost done with our keys. We are at the three R's. Second to the last key, review, revise, and recommit. Welcome to the broadcast this Saturday, and this Saturday, as every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we bring you tools and information that will help you create the financial independence that you and your family so desire. We do this simply by bringing you the keys every week. And in addition, we have fabulous guests that participate in the show that help round out and give you the why behind the what to do when it comes to money management. And we can all use a little bit more of that in these challenging economic times. So on today's show, we have lots in store. Our Investor's Edge guest is Dave Young, and our tease guest is Bill Thomason, and you may remember him as our NLP coach from Tony Robbins fame, and he's joined us before, and he's going to help us review and revise and recommit to our primary goal of creating financial independence for ourselves and our families. As always, we have our trivia question of the week. And we are answering and participating with our trivia question via the chat room. Our regular segment host for News by the Numbers, Karen Gurm, is mastering that chat, and she will help you navigate the trivia question for this week. For those of you who are not familiar with the show, welcome for the first time. I also want to share with you that our trivia question is pulled from the previous week's broadcast. So, for those of you just joining us for the first time, not only are you able to listen live here on Saturdays, but if you happen to miss the episode, that's okay too, because you can download it to your MP3 player, iPod, or computer, and you can listen at any time at your convenience. And in that vein, we've designed our trivia question to go right hand-in-hand with that. So our trivia questions are always brought from the previous week's broadcast. So some information that was shared at some point throughout the broadcast is what we form our trivia question on. So, number one, it reinforces what you learned. And number two, by subscribing to the e-zine, you get your trivia question ahead of time. So if you haven't listened to the broadcast, you can read the question and then look for the answer and then join our chat room to win. Now, we have incredible prizes. We have a 13-week financial coaching package that takes you through each key individually, helps you participate in your own financial independence planning, and also gives you the accountability to make sure that you stick with the plan and create true new financial patterns for the rest of your life and create healthy money management skills. So we're excited about that. So in order to get the trivia question for the week, you have to subscribe to the e-zine. And you can do that one of a couple ways. If you're currently visiting our show page on the radio, on Blog Talk Radio, just scroll down to the bottom of the show page. You'll see a great little box there that says sign me up and just drop in your email address and voila, you too will also have the access to the trivia questions. But not only that, you also get news tips and information about our upcoming guests and all kind of fun programs that only are available to our EZine subscribers. If you are not currently in front of your Blog Talk Radio homepage for our show, you can also send us an email manually by simply dropping an email to ezine, that's E-Z-I-N-E, at unlockyourwealth.com. That's ezine, E-Z-I-N-E, at unlockyourwealth.com. So subscribe to that. You'll also get all of that fabulous information and be able to answer the trivia question. We have 13 weeks of financial coaching, as I said, and additionally, we also have all of our guests that appear on the show. We have autographed books from them, so you can pick from that library of some particular area you want to learn more about. Now, in addition to that, this broadcast, we also have our fabulous, great interviews this week. And we're working on our last key again, the 3 R's, review, revise, and recommit. Now, additionally, if you guys can't get enough in a weekly dose of our radio show Isn't Cutting the Mustard, you can also follow us on Twitter. Yes, if you would like daily news, financial information, and relevant tips, tricks, and inspirational quotes that will help you stay on the path to financial independence, then just follow us on Twitter. And you can receive our tweets just simply by following Unlock Your Wealth. And because there's limited number of characters, it's Unlock YR Wealth. Unlock YR Wealth. So follow us on that. Also, you can become a fan of ours on Facebook and join our fan page or myspace.com/unlockyourwealth. We have an incredible blog that you can click through from the radio program or simply visit our website. It's got chock full of information and tidbits and a lot of the stuff that we cover on the show. You can visit us at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
From my personal experience, Brandon has been a lifesaver. He made my move in fast, accommodating, and effortless when I needed it the most. I had to move my father from California to come live with me when I myself hadn't found my own place. I gave Brandon an area, a very budgeted price range, and within a day, I viewed my dream home. It was in the area that I only hoped to live in, but didn't expect to find with my budgeted price. Needless to say, me and my father were moving our stuff that very same weekend. It was amazing how fast he was able to find us a place and get us moved in. You know that sense of security that comes from being in your own home? Brandon was able to return that to us. Thanks, Brandon.
Just like Joanna, I can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. Hi, my name is Brandon Mullen, and I'm a real estate professional with HQ Real Estate Investment, LLC. From the first-time homeowner to the seasoned real estate investor, I can assess your needs and assist you in locating a home that gives you the lifestyle you desire while meeting your financial needs. Now, I'm not looking to just sell you a home. I'm here to provide you with the information and support that will make home ownership a secure, rewarding, and prosperous experience. Call me, Brandon Mullen, at 602-540-8645. HQ Real Estate Investment, LLC. Buy and sell real estate in a whole new way.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. But whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success, with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We are now in our Investor's Edge segment, and we have a great guest, a very investor-savvy guest, if you will. Dave Young will be joining us today. He is the president and founder of Paragon Wealth Management. He started his career as an entrepreneur. He successfully started over 24 businesses in the early 80s. In 1986, he decided to sell his business and invest the proceeds, but he was unable to find an investment company that met his needs. Well, as a result, later that year, he began to research methods for investing that would produce the most profitable returns. He believed in his method so much that he invested his life savings and started his company, Paragon Wealth Management. Over 20 years later, Dave continues to invest and research ways he can improve his business to better serve his clients. His methods have attracted national and local attention. He has also been interviewed by Business Week, CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, The Deseret Morning News, and other national and local media. He is now going to be a part of our broadcast, which I'm so excited. And he's also written several articles and done a bunch of blogs as well. So I would like to welcome Dave Young to the broadcast. Dave, thanks so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that nice introduction.
Absolutely. You probably couldn't have done it better if you would have written it yourself.
That's right.
I cheated and I had help, so anyway, I hope that details your experience. And I really like your story. I found myself in my 20s trying to find a way. I was a stockbroker myself and trying to carve out my niche. And I just kind of made this natural evolution from the stock market to the mortgage market. As a salesperson, it was easier to give money away than it was to ask for it, as far as my thoughts were concerned.
Right.
And you know, and I also have a little short attention span too, so that kind of helps. So I switched over after about 8 years in the market and then doing investment advising. I went into mortgages and then real estate. I was a natural progression from there. And what I did was I wrote this real estate investment strategy called The Keys to Riches, and I teach people to build wealth through real estate systematically. And so we go through every aspect of our credit, our finances, our savings, and we structure our savings so we have money left over after we protect our future, both near-term, mid- and long-term, by creating different savings vehicles and investment vehicles, and then we add to that mix real estate. And I was really intrigued by your choice. And I know that when I get frustrated and I'm not finding what I need in the marketplace, I kind of figure out, I try to learn all I can, and then I kind of carve out my own niche. And it sounded like that's what you did with your wealth management company. Tell me what Paragon focuses on.
Yeah, Paragon is primarily a stock market investment firm. So, for example, if you came to us and you had a couple hundred thousand dollars that you needed to invest, we would sit down with you, we'd try and figure out how much risk you wanted to take with that money, if the money's meant to be super conservative or if it's meant to be super aggressive or if it's anywhere in between. And then based on the risk level that you had, we would build a portfolio to capitalize on that. And what we do here is we run a lot of wealth management firms are kind of a financial planning catch-all. They're involved in everything to do with person's finances. For us, we're primarily focused on the investment side of things. And my thoughts are on that are, yeah, it's nice to go to a financial planning firm and get advice on these different things, and yes, they are important. But at the end of the day, what a person really cares about is the investment return that they get. or that's what they should care about. Because to me, a lot of times, your traditional financial planners kind of dance around that. They provide all these other services and mediocre investment performance, whereas...
And insurance. Buy these insurance products for retirement.
Right. Insurance is a solution to everything for a lot of guys. But our focus is really on, this is where you're starting, this is where you want to end up, and we're going to try and get you there the safest, most effective way possible. And so we run two portfolios. We run one extremely conservative portfolio. Its primary, the way it's put together, is its number one focus is to not lose money. And then its number two focus is to get as good a return as we can under the premise, under the handcuffs of not losing money. That's on the conservative side. And then on the growth side, we have another portfolio that's completely growth-oriented. And that one, the premise is we're trying to generate returns in excess of 15% per year is the number one objective. And the secondary objective is to do it in as safe a way as possible. So they've kind of got different ways of approaching the market. And then all of our clients, back to you coming to us with a couple $100,000, all of our clients, depending on their risk level, are going to own a combination of those two portfolios. So if we decided you're pretty conservative, you're probably going to be 80% managed income, 20% in our growth portfolio. If you're pretty aggressive, then you could be the flip of that. And we have clients that are, all different allocations between those two portfolios.
My thoughts for having you on was, given what's gone on in the marketplace over the last almost year now, and people not knowing what to do, but having a significant amount of wealth, they want to be able to put their assets somewhere and know that they're safe. And, Madoff aside, I have seen some people who I thought were very effective decision makers, excellent in whatever their profession, whether it be, an attorney or a CPA and things, and people that you would feel would have an ability to assess risk and to not fly by the seat of their pants given their conservative professions, but they were doing that in the marketplace and flying by the seat of their pants. And, one of my husband's friends who retired early from a pretty significant legal settlement, he stopped practicing law and took up recreation as his primary daily, work. And they have a couple businesses together. And I remember, I walked into the conference room because they were sitting there. We all share offices, and he's watching the TV. And he's like, I'm going to have to go back to work. And I'm like, how do you do that? Because I'm a smart person. I'm not the smartest person, but I was a trader. I have all of my stuff in mutual funds. I've diversified my risk because, I've been through a pretty sticky divorce. And now that I'm remarried, I have to, I had to start all over after my divorce. And I had to put that money somewhere, and because I wasn't trading daily and watching the market, I knew that I needed to have somebody else manage it, and I wasn't caught in any individual stocks, and my portfolio took a little bit of a hit, but, I'm young, I'm going to be 40 this year, but, I've had, 18% returns for a long time, and I'm set back to, 9, and that's still not a bad day, and
yeah.
I can't believe all these other people, made these mistakes, and I espouse real estate as an investment tool because it's a tangible asset and it can create income and it can do a variety of things just like the stock market does.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you say to someone who now has to go back to work, and they came to you and they said, well, I don't know what to do. I thought I knew it all and clearly I didn't know enough. What do I do now? What would you say to that person? What do I do now?
Well, you'd have to, look at their individual situation, obviously. But in general, there's a lot of things that you're saying are really interesting. One, that smart people seem to make a lot of bad investment decisions. And we see that a lot, because usually what you have is, in order for a person to generate a significant savings over time, they've usually got to be pretty focused at what they do. So maybe they're a doctor, maybe they're a dentist, maybe they're an attorney, maybe they're a business person, but they're pretty focused at what they do, and that's where all their time and resources are spent. And mm-hmm. Like for you, I mean, you spend all your time doing what you do. And for these people, that doesn't usually allow them a lot of time on the investment side. And so you find a lot of times people who, they spend 99% of their time focused on what they do and 1% of their time focused on their investments. And, that just doesn't really work out, because there's a million ways to lose money out there. And if you're not really paying attention, that can happen. So we recommend, if you don't have the time, the resources, and the expertise, that you find someone who can help you. And that's a tricky proposition in and of itself, because
they don't help a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a lot of advisors that don't add a lot of value either. But we recommend that a person find an advisor or somebody to work with, or like with the people that you work with. You've got training programs and different ways to help people go down that path. But whether you're hiring an advisor to help you or whether you're trying to do it yourself, either way, you've got to spend some time and you've got to focus on it. Because if it's just a by the way afterthought, then it's going to turn around and bite you.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess back to your question of what a person should do now. Right now, in general, investors usually do exactly the wrong thing at the wrong time. So, for example, go back to a couple of years ago. We're in 2007. The markets are going along. The stock market actually wasn't that hot. It did okay between 2003 and 2007, but it wasn't like red hot. The real estate market, on the other hand, did get red hot out into late 2007. And at that time, people were just piling in like crazy. And by definition, prices were being pushed up because so many people were piling in. That was exactly the wrong time to do that. Now we've got the inverse. Now we've got, housing values have plummeted off a cliff. The stock market was down 54% last year at its lows from top to bottom. That was an event that happens, maybe two or three times in most people's lifetimes. So now we're in a situation where everything's half priced, and people are moving towards guaranteed safe investments. And
I
that's
know.
Real focus. and that's exactly the wrong time to be doing that.
I've been buying individual stocks, and I haven't done that in years because, when major companies are, $3, $4, $5 a share that are going to be around, they're a staple. I mean, how can you not get back in the market? How can you not, get back up? And I told all these people that were watching the TV that day, and I said, well, you never lose until you sell.
Mm-hmm.
And what did they do? They watched, they're like, I can't listen to you. And then they sold at the worst possible time.
Right.
Like, why did you do that? Why didn't you just, let it go? And he goes, no, I got to cut bait.
Yeah.
You don't. Just leave it alone. Go back to work for money, but just leave that alone. It'll come back. It always does.
Right. Well, and a lot of people, when the market hit those lows of 6,500 back in March, all the talking heads on television were saying, it's going to 4,500. It's going to 4,000. And investors always extrapolate, and the media a lot of times extrapolates even worse. And they assume that because it's going one direction, it's going to go that way, indefinitely. When it's going up, they extrapolate it up, and it's going down, they extrapolate it down, and that's a recipe for disaster with investing.
Well, and it makes it very easy too, because we're a soundbite society. Like, if we can't get our news in 30 seconds or less, or like on Twitter and 140 characters, we're just uninterested.
Right.
We've created this hurried, rushed society. And so if that's the way that you're getting your information and you're just working off of the 30-second soundbite, you shouldn't be surprised if you're losing money. Or, you know, I mean, people call me insensitive. But, you know, I mean, oh, geez Louise, why should you have more money than the guy that watches the market every day, or at least as much? The guy that's tracking the market and doing his homework. I mean, come on now. You know, I don't know. I think that this whole utopian, you know, equal society is starting to permeate the wrong people's brains. You know, and you know, the thing that I also don't have a lot of compassion for is I, you know, and with all of these government bailouts, and that's a whole nother thing, is, you know, when people invested in the stock market and they made money, I don't know that anybody gave back that return. So if you lose, it's nobody's fault but your own, but that was the risk you took. That's why it's called risk and return.
Right.
And so you don't just have to be in for the good part. You got to take your lumps too. And
You're
smart, you'll know how to capitalize on the big parts and minimize the lumps. But it's just the way it goes. And you know, I would never ask for a refund because I know that I've walked away with more money than I ever gave back. So I'm cool with the system as it is.
Right. I think there's huge opportunities right now, and on the real estate side and on the stock market side. I mean, it's normally in a normal environment, like I say, we're trying to compound at 15% a year, and to do that, we have to search high and low for opportunities. And the markets are really competitive, and there's a lot of professional people out there, really smart professional people that are playing those markets. And so in a normal environment, we've got to work really hard to generate those kinds of returns. In this environment, to me, it's like somebody pulled up with a semi-truckload of bargains and just dumped them in our parking lot. I mean, there's so many opportunities that it's almost down to deciding what's the best opportunity. But I think there's huge opportunities right now for investors.
Mm-hmm. You know, and on both sides of the fence, in the stock market and the real estate market. And I was, you know, because of my experience in mortgages, and I watched what happened at the turn of the century, or the millennium, if you will, in the mortgage business, and as the underwriting criteria expanded and allowed all kinds of other garbage to get in, you could state your income and not prove your income, and you too, as a Home Depot sales clerk making $12 an hour, can also live in a $700,000 condo.
Right.
Just sign here. And, you know, the arrogance of our society got the best of us because, you know, everybody wants to blame the mortgage lenders. And, you know, they're part of the problem. You know, I wouldn't do any of those loans. That's how I created my Keys to Riches system, because I'm like, if you just fix your credit, if you just tweak these two things, or if you just put a few dollars in the bank, or if you just reduce your debt just a little bit, you could get a better interest rate. And, you know, that means you could buy more homes. And what kind of messed things up for a while, you know, is there needs to be a barrier to entry in home ownership, because it's an immense responsibility that people don't realize. And half of them that bought shouldn't have been buying. They were still, you know, in a tenant. So some people will be permanent tenants because of, you know, income or responsibility, whatever it might be. And when interest rates dropped so low after 9/11, and that was kind of the undoing. And then when rates stayed so low, that not so much that they dropped low, but when they stayed so low, and then you took all of these out-of-the-box non-conforming loans and started giving them to people with shady credit and stuff, because, you know, like in the 90s, a smoking deal on a 30-year fixed rate loan was 9.5%. If you got a subprime loan for a mortgage, you were paying 12%. That significantly cut your affordability at that end of the interest rate spectrum.
Right.
But when you're talking, you know, interest rates are at 4.5% and a subprime loan is 6.5% or 7%, even the crappy credit people that you know, don't pay their bills on time or have sketchy income, now those people are eligible for home ownership too. And that was the beginning of the end. And what they were doing so they could get even lower rates is they were putting them on those ARMs, which were income and investment tools for the wealthy. You know, you do those adjustable rate mortgages that that move with a particular market, like the LIBOR or the MTA arm or something, treasuries, whatever. And, you know, that's for somebody that has the ability to go out and make more money the next day, you know, as an entrepreneur or a professional. You know, like, for example, I could go sell another house if my mortgage payment went up tomorrow. You know, another person can just sell another widget. But if you flip burgers, whether you flip 10 or 10,000, you're still getting paid the same value for the hour.
Right.
And people can't, you know, take a bump in it. And so they give them this three-year arm because they're supposed to fix their credit in 3 years. But if people don't fix their credit up front, they don't have the responsibility to fix it on the back end. And this has been my experience in the mortgage business. And so I knew at that moment in 04 when I'm watching this go, before the real estate markets went nuts, and that's a whole other story, but I knew that our banking system would not be able to handle the default. I just knew it. I saw it. I said it on my radio show 5 years ago. My smart investment clients listened. And they moved with the market, and when the market went up, that's when they sold at the peak of the market, and they've just been holding cash waiting for these days to snap up their real estate and to buy that cheap stock. And, you know, your money is made on the buy, not the sell, and if you're buying at the height of the market, chances are there's only one other direction to go in that you're more likely to go.
Yeah.
And I saw this coming, and I knew it was going to be bad, and I kept preaching it, and it fell on deaf ears, and I was just happened to be in Hong Kong at the time, and in 07 when the announcements started coming in about the banking industry, and everybody is standing there in disbelief. I'm probably in a room of 35 people, and, you know, half Chinese, half American, or other English-speaking nationalities, and they're all shocked. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, I told you so. But I had no idea it was going to be this bad. I mean, like, because I didn't think government would intervene like it has and kind of try to keep propping up people. And I'm very, you know, I'm an Ayn Rand objectivist, and they need to let those bigger companies that have the money that made the smart moves gobble up the other ones and move on and just, you know, allowing people to not be foreclosed on is just perpetuating the pain, and it's dragging it out.
Well, there was really three parts that, I mean, that kind of converged together, I think, to cause this whole mess. And initially, there was a lot of government legislation and government mandates to ease lending and to make homes more affordable was the mantra. But in the process, they were basically lowering the credit standards. And so you had it initially – the government pushed that out, and then you have the lending institutions, so that now they're under a mandate to provide easier credit, and a lot of them were all for it because there was a lot of fees to be had, you know, in creating all these loans. And then the third part was, like you said, the individual borrowers, you know, people taking out loans that they couldn't afford, they couldn't pay for. And so you take those three together, and I mean, everyone's pointing fingers at everyone, but those three things kind of came together to bring this down. And so when you talk about the government bailout side of things, I think the government bailout is just an extension of they started it in the first place, and now they're still trying to be involved and still making it work.
I know. And they're throwing people under the bus that they told them to do what they did.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, wow. So now families, you know, I mean, lives are being destroyed. Families are being crushed by all of this stuff that, you know, and it all started when Clinton wanted to encourage home ownership in the 90s, in 92 or something like that, I think was the first wave of all of that affordability stuff that was coming out, and everybody should own a home, and they shouldn't. Only people that are prepared and ready for the opportunity of home ownership should own a home, and everybody else should just, you know, rent.
Right.
And accept their fate. You know, I mean, and home ownership isn't right for everybody, but to make it seem like it is, there was like a whole culture movement I felt in the 90s to really press that, you know.
Absolutely.
Make people feel like they were insignificant if they weren't a homeowner. Well, you have it seized the American dream. And so they went and seized it, and it became a nightmare real quick.
Right.
It wasn't dreamlike anymore.
You know, one thing you mentioned that was kind of interesting was as far as people piling in and at the right, you know, the wrong time. And one of the indicators that everything we do is quantitative based. So in other words, we're every day downloading all kinds of data points on the market, and then we're running those through computer models, and that's what drives our investment process. But one of those models is a sentiment model, and it's measuring how many people are optimistic on the market versus how many people are pessimistic on the market at any point in time. And just like clockwork, whenever you get to a point to where 70% of the people think the market's going up, there's an 85% probability that the market will sell off at that point. And likewise, when you get to the point that only 30% of people think the market's going up, 70% think it's going down, there's an 85% probability the market's going up from those levels. So it's absolutely inverse from what, you know, what a person is going to be feeling, what a person is going to be thinking. You know, it just what you would do by your gut instinct. It's all the reverse of that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I would like for you to share is, you know, so, I mean, there's never a more golden opportunity to be in the market than right now. So, and most of everything that we talk about is real estate. So, you know, people need to have their mid and long-term savings in investment vehicles. They don't have to be anything more than a bond fund if they're, you know, really scared or stuff. I mean, there's a lot of different very conservative interests that will outpace inflation, so at least they're not losing money if they have it at their local savings account in the bank, you know, and they've got to work towards some sort of return. And with prices so cheap, you know, anybody getting in the market right now, it's like, this reminds me, my freshman year in college was the crash of 87. And I started investing in a mutual fund, just like $25 a month, you know. And it was the Hartwell Emerging Growth Fund. I can't believe I even remember that. It just popped into my head. And by the time, like my sophomore, I took a year off of school, but by the time I got to my, you know, fourth year in college, I had a huge chunk of money growing on my behalf because it was right after the crash. And so now's a great time, I think.
Uh-huh.
And my question to you is, you know, as always, buyer beware. What are some good questions to ask when you interview a potential investment advisor for you?
That's a great question. And it's really, I try and think of that in terms of if my, you know, my grandma was going to go out and she was going to have a couple hundred thousand dollars to invest, how would she find someone who was going to give her good advice? The first thing I would do, there's hundreds of thousands of people that call themselves advisors. You don't necessarily have to have a certain degree or a certain this or a certain that to call yourself financial advisors. So a lot of people can call themselves financial advisors. And the truth is that a lot of people who call themselves financial advisors know just a little bit more than the general public. They know it doesn't sound like they know what they're talking about, but just a little bit more. What I would do is personally I would avoid anyone who doesn't have a fiduciary responsibility. In other words, if an advisor is registered with the SEC, they have a fiduciary obligation to act in your best interest, which means they have a legal obligation to do what's good for you. If they don't have that fiduciary responsibility, then they're usually more on the product sales side. And because the guys who are selling insurance, the people who are selling financial products and receiving commissions, they don't have fiduciary responsibility. They're product salesmen. And, I mean, you could be buying a car, you could buy an insurance policy, you could be buying a mutual fund, you could be buying this, that. They're salespeople, and they don't have fiduciary responsibility. So that's not to say that they're all bad. It's just to say that there's a decent chance that their interests might not be aligned with yours. And so, anyway, if you go through the gamut and you say, of all the advisors out there, how many have fiduciary responsibility? how many are regulated by the SEC. That's about 15% of all advisors. So that takes 85% that you take off your radar screen. And like I say, those are all product salesmen. And like I said, they're nice people. They might do a great job for you, but why take the chance? So now you're down to 15% of advisors, and you're only dealing with fiduciaries. You're dealing with registered investment advisors. Once you've got that, then you're into the land of, oh, is this an investment advisor? And probably 90% of the investment advisors are this type. They simply take your couple hundred thousand dollars and they divide it into 8 or 10 categories. They diversify it out for you, and then they invest it in a cost-effective way. And then most of them, they charge you like 1% a year to essentially do this diversification for you and kind of monitor it and tell you what happens. But that's all they're really doing, is telling you what happens after the fact. But with investment advisors, now that you're only dealing with the 15%, you should be able to say, okay, what is your track record? And a lot of investment advisors aren't going to be able to give you a track record, because if they have 100 different clients, those 100 different clients are going to be in 100 different things. And so you want an advisor that actually has a track record that you can say, that he can say, this is what I did for my clients in this category over the last, 5 to 10 years. And then once you're down to finding these fiduciary advisors who have a track record, then it's simply a matter of comparing track records and answering the question, well, okay, these are the returns they got, but how much risk did they take to get those returns? What are the risk-adjusted returns look like? And you can really narrow it down that way. That takes away from, just being pitched on an annuity or being pitched on an insurance product, insurance policy, or buy these mutual funds, and you see what I mean? In terms of, you take it from that to a concrete, I'm dealing with fiduciaries, I'm dealing with investment advisors who have fiduciary responsibility, and I'm comparing their track records. And then ideally, in my opinion, you want somebody who's been in the game for at least 10 years. That will take investment advisors who have been through two horrible bear markets, and you can see how they did, So, anyway, that's how I would break it down.
That is great. That's going to be very helpful to those listening, because so many people aren't aware of what resources are available. I mean, we'll be lucky if anybody's heard of the NASD, but to be able to filter through the product salesmen, search out the registered investment advisors, and the tenure is so important. And I remember when I was I was a stockbroker. I was only 23, and I was inspired by Gordon Gekko and Greed is Good, So I thought I was going to be this super fabulous power lunch, $1 million deals kind of stockbroker. And then when I actually got the job, I was like, oh, I'm just a glorified telemarketer. Thank you. And then I'm the only woman in a room of 40 men, and I'm like, what am I doing? And I'm listening to all of them, and I was so lucky. My boss brought me in and sat with me and gave me some tips and some tricks to do on the phone. And, he turned me into a monster. I was like, I would outsell these guys that have been doing it for years. And, the internet wasn't prevalent then. So I'm fortunate that nobody knew that I'd only been in the business for a little bit. But I was just kicking butt and, I was a selling machine, and when anybody asked me what my experience was, I mean, he taught me to use voice and diction to make myself sound older and be more aggressive on the phone and say, what are we doing back here on my experience? This is going up. Look at the stock market. Call your other broker who didn't bother to call you first with this hot tip. I was just so, back in the day I was full of piss and vinegar. It's kind of fun. And those are the people that you want to watch out for, it wasn't very fulfilling for me after a while. It was kind of empty, making a millionaire, more millions just really didn't do much for me. I didn't feel like I was making a difference. So This is great information for people to use because so many people, they feel wronged by their current advisor, and their current advisor could be a great person, so that notwithstanding. But, you know, some people just like to change it up, and so that would be a great way to do so. I wanted to ask you, by the way, do you know Dick Strong?
I don't.
Okay, he's from Strong Capital.
Not from Strong Funds, but Strong Capital.
Well, it's Strong Capital now, but it was Strong Funds back in the day. And Wells Fargo bought him out.
Okay.
I was just wondering if you knew him or not. He's a friend of my husband's. He's a really neat guy, and he's a heck of a stock picker, and he is a maverick for sure.
Uh-huh.
I like him. He's a cool guy, so I didn't know if you knew him or not.
Yeah, I don't think I do.
Well, if you ever have an opportunity to get to know him, it would be worth your while because you feel like you're walking among greatness with some of his accomplishments in the financial market.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
Now, if you were to leave our guests, our listeners, with a bit of advice, if you had to just pick one thing that you would say to them given the current markets, what would that be?
I would say, as far as one parting word of advice, I really think we are at a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity right now in terms of an opportunity to buy. It's difficult to do, because of the amount of risk that's been out there, but that is when you're rewarded the most. And so I think people should be actively taking positions and buying. As far as what I do personally, from a company standpoint, everything we run is in the stock market. And, our performance numbers put us in the top 1% of advisors out there. So we're really strong on that side. But for me personally, essentially what I do is, and I advise my clients to do, is when you're building wealth and you're building an asset base, you want to put about a third of your assets in the market, about a third of your assets in real estate, and then ideally, if you've got a business you're running, you put about a third of your assets in that. And over time, those are three ways that you can build serious wealth over time, and they kind of offset each other and complement each other. And that's something that I've done for years and recommend to my clients. Now, if you don't have a business, then I just split it 50-50 between stocks and real estate. I think that gives you a really good diversified portfolio. But I think right now is a huge opportunity for investors, and I think they should be proactively preparing for it. Well, one thing that we've been doing with our clients, just really quickly, is one final word of advice, is you can, when the market went down and people were in diversified portfolios, they went down with the market, and so they're down 54%. But when the market is coming back, if you look at the last 34 bear markets we've had over the last 100 years, when the market comes back, there's certain areas of the market that come out harder and faster, and those are the areas that you definitely want to be invested in right now. In other words, in an ideal world, what you want to do is say you got beat up in the market when the market went down in a diversified portfolio, you should be rotating your portfolio into those top 10 sectors. We track a couple hundred sectors, and you should be in those top 10 sectors positioning your portfolio going forward. And what that'll do for you is, for example, in 2003, when the market came back, the S&P was up 27%. Our growth portfolios were up over 50% that year. But that's because we were positioned in those areas of the market that would come back fastest. And it's not like a random thing that sometimes these come back fastest, sometimes those come back fastest. Now, you look at the last 34 bear markets, and consistently the same areas of the market come back the fastest. So I would recommend that people are positioning their portfolios in those areas.
Great. Well, that's wonderful advice. Do you have a website where people can get more information about what you do and contact information?
Yeah, our website is the name of the company is Paragon Wealth Management. The website is paragonwealth.com, and there's actually a wealth of information on the website. One thing we've been doing a lot with this mess is a lot of financial portfolio reviews for investors out there. We don't charge anything for it. We basically just look at their portfolio and tell them if we think they're positioned right. We tell them if we think their advisors, you know, treating them right. And we just kind of give them a second opinion to help them position to capitalize on this recovery. So if you go to our website, you can look all around. Like I said, there's a lot of information, but if you go to the free portfolio review section, you can sign up and we'll spend a half hour just looking at your personal information and making recommendations on it.
Wow, that's great. Well, I know that the audience will certainly enjoy that reference and an opportunity for a free portfolio review. We'll put that that link will be live on our website for a week after the broadcast. So for those that aren't able to take and put pen to paper with that ParagonWealth.com website, you'll be able to link through ours at UnlockYourWealth.com. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Dave. It's been great to switch gears and talk about a different market and see that not only does the real estate market have opportunity, but so does the stock market yet again. So I'm excited about that, and I'm excited you decided to stop by this weekend and join us. So thanks again for your time.
Okay, well, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Yay. And for those that are tuned in, stay tuned because we have more after this.
A weatherman named Larry Chovakov, a news reporter named Fifi Furfurfester, an octopus riding hermit named Gus. Read all about it in Laborless Magazine, the fictional lifestyle magazine from the town of Laborless, available at sociallyacceptable.org.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagonaws on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Greetings and welcome back to the broadcast. Today's special guest I am pleased to present is not only a personal friend, but a mentor and a coach to me as well. Bill Thomason is an NLP trainer. He is one away from the master, as I like to think that I am. Trained with Tony Robbins, the guru of neuro-linguistic programming. And for those of you who are joining the show for the first time and are just learning about the Keys to Riches and all the different offerings we have with the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, one of the important things, and I think that was critical to the success of the program, and so the program is able to be duplicatable and consistent over time, is the fact that we have incorporated neurolinguistic programming techniques into all of the keys to help ensure your success. As you know, there are a plethora of get-rich-quick schemes out there, and I guess they probably shouldn't be phrased such, but we think of them as get-rich-quick because only some people can do them. And it's not that only some people can do them. Everybody has the same set of tools to be able to accomplish those great feats. But the reason why that fine print is down there is because it says these results are atypical of this particular testimonial is because that person has successfully created behavior patterns that model excellence. And to help us talk more about that and relate it to this week's key, which is review, revise, and the significant part, recommit, I'd like to welcome to the broadcast my special friend, Bill Thomason. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hello, Heather. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on the broadcast again. And whenever I can work you in, it gives me a personal extra shot to be recommitted to all of the things that I'm doing within my life. And what a perfect way to talk about today's key, which is the review, revise, and recommit key. As we know from our finances, our personalized change on a daily basis and sometimes hourly, depending on how many people are in your professional or familial lives. And it's important because I like this key because of the one thing that was said to me years ago when I said, how could I have let this happen, when I was referring to an incredible weight gain when I really didn't have any real reason to be heavy. I'd never been heavy all my life. And, you know, people in my office were snackers, and that was like totally not my life, not as a kid, not as an adult. And I'm in my mid-20s, and all of a sudden I've got 15 extra pounds, like the freshman 15, except I'm already in the workplace. And I don't know where it came from, and my boss at the time said something very interesting to me, and that's what makes, I think, this key so important. He says, I said, how could this have happened? And he says, Heather, he says, you know, we would never let anybody deliberately knock us off track, but you can always be nudged in the wrong direction. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. And, you know, because it was said so quickly, because it was just a part of what he was thinking and his life, and that was something, a consideration that he had made when he created his patterns for success. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, we are so right. When we get deeply entrenched in like a position, especially like politics or something like that, where we're totally ingrained, we would never let anybody deliberately change our mind or talk us out of our position. But it's so easy. And, you know, when it relates to diet, it was just like, well, it's only a few potato chips, and I'm sure I'm still going to work out later on today. And me working out later on today wasn't relevant. Then it went from, you know, well, I'll just have, you know, this one bag of chips, you know, and I went from just having a couple of chips from somebody else's bag to a personal bag myself to having an entire bag of potato chips sitting on my desk all day. And that was so not like who I was and or who I am. And for me to get so knocked off track just because everybody else in my office was fat, you know, I used to be really aggressive toward those people and be like, oh, you know, I can't believe you guys snack like that. You're just poisoning yourselves. And then I tried it, and before you know it, you know, I was 20 steps from center. And I couldn't believe that. And we do that with our money, too. And that's why I created the review, revise, and recommit key. And I think that's where diets fail and budgeting fails, is because it works for a while, but circumstances change, but we don't change our behavior patterns. And then before you know it, unbeknownst to us, we're, again, 20 steps left of center. And so this key is so important for that. And one of the things that I think is so great about you is I remember in class when someone would lay out an excuse for something, you would just look at them and kind of nod your head and go, and? And then it just kind of said, okay, so now that I'm over with my excuses, I fell off the wagon, whatever my issue was, now it's time to get back in the saddle and get refocused. And that's why I thought, who better could I have to illustrate this concept than you? So can you tell me a little bit about how do we get nudged? What in our brains, especially if we have these patterns for success already ingrained, like I said, for 26 years, I was a skinny mini.
Yeah, what a great introduction to this. I've got actually several ideas floating around just from the story that you were telling. the whole idea of getting, we do sometimes just kind of get nudged in one direction or another and haven't really realized the impact of communication with other people, because it brings us right into what is persuasion, what is influence. And the truth of the matter is, it's a basic piece of NLP, which is part of it is about communication, that it's not possible not to communicate with people. Most of us kind of walk around thinking that, well, the thoughts that are in my head are just in my head, and they don't affect anybody else. But when you really begin to look at it, people are getting impacted by kind of whatever you're thinking, and they're actually much more perceptive than you think they might be. But then there's that subtle little piece, the quality information that we pick up that is not so much what people say, it's not any of that, it's about what they do, and that's a communication that gets imprinted on us, and it's very subtle. I know we're they've done studies with this, they find that we're bombarded with messages, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 different advertising messages every day. You see billboards on the highway, you watch television or listen to the radio or anything, you've got some, even the cereal box, I mean, everything has a marketing message of some kind.
And now they're spamming our text messages too now.
Oh yeah, so there's so much that we're exposed to. And all over the internet, all over every web page, there's the little links that go here and there, and sometimes you didn't even mean to click it, but here you are. And it's kind of like that.
Whoops.
It's kind of like that in our behavior too. And it's just you want to get more consciously aware of how your programming works. In fact, a way of thinking about what NLP does, it's a very powerful technology for persuasion, and you want to use it with integrity, that as you understand how the brain and nervous system works, in a way, it's kind of the only defense. Knowledge about how your brain and nervous system works is, you think about, well, who's been studying this technology for personal change? Well, I'll tell you, the government studied it. I'll tell you, the scientists have been studying it. And you're kind of, the only defense is, if you get more understanding of how it works, then you have some recourse about what you let filter in and what you don't. And sometimes you just find yourself how many steps you said from center. So how do you get back there again? And this is a really great little piece of the steps, the revise, review, revise, and recommit. There's a belief system in NLP that says there is no such thing as failure, because I think part of this, how do you get re-centered on what it is you say you want in life? How do you keep that present for yourself when you're enticed by so many other things is a really big issue. And if there's no such thing as failure, this is something that is credited to Edison, Thomas Edison saying this, if there's no such thing as failure, it's a question, well, what would you be doing in your life if you absolutely knew in your heart of hearts, the deep level of your knowing and being of who you are, that there was no way you could fail? Well, you'd probably be doing a lot of things, wouldn't you? And what stops people is one of the things we want to look at, is what stops people is the fear that they could fail, the fear that they might do it wrong. You take that off the plate, and there are probably a lot of things that you can do. So or a lot of things you would be doing, and let's get the rest of this. If there is no failure, what there is just feedback. So you found yourself 20 steps from center, and that, if you understand it, is not necessarily a failure in the NLP way of looking at things. If it's not a failure, it's just feedback. If you get feedback about what you've been doing, you created some sort of strategy for getting any result that you might have. Maybe you're in a financially difficult period. Many of us have been lately. And you begin to realize that, well, that's just feedback, not necessarily that you did it wrong and all is lost and you're going to go down the tubes. It just means that there are some things that need to happen for you to change the strategy of how you got to where you did get, so that you begin to change that strategy to get to a place you'd rather be. So sometimes we're not getting the expected outcome that we thought we were going to get, and we begin to view that as just feedback. So if you can get that piece of it, it really is useful for this whole conversation. There's a Native American story. In fact, there's thousands of stories about the coyote myth. Coyote is an animal in the natural kingdom that, according to the Native American stories, he's the trickster. And the thing about the trickster is he loves to play tricks on people, but quite often he gets caught in his own traps. So it's like the cartoon where the steamroller comes along and runs right over the coyote. And he gets up, he kind of peels himself up off the floor and gets from two dimension to one to three dimensions again. And he just can't believe that really happened to him. So he runs back around to, in front of the steamroller, and sure enough, he gets run over again. We get caught in our own traps. So in a way, it's kind of the same thing that we're talking about. How do you get this? Lots of people, when they stop at the end of the day, things go well or they don't go well. And quite often, you get kind of two things that happen. One thing is that people never realize their mistake, like the coyote. And they just keep going from one calamity into another, into another, into another. So review, revise, and recommit is going to be a way of making sure that you're not continuing that pattern of one calamity to another. And you get aware, and you got to make some changes. The other thing that happens is there are people that, we get to the end of the day, and I start thinking about what didn't go well, and, boy, it's just a confirmation of everything that I don't do well and I'm not very good and whatever those conversations are that are in your own head. And then you get people who are just so focused on what they didn't do well that they're stuck. So they have the negative feelings that go with it, and that's not particularly resourceful. So you want to find some place in between these two extremes. Does that follow?
Yes.
So on one extreme, you want to make sure you're not doing the same problems again. On the other extreme, you also don't want to take yourself down a emotional tunnel that doesn't really help you learn from your own mistakes. So
that's one reason why I don't care for support groups, because they focus on commiseration as opposed to a solution for working through the grief.
Exactly. And that's a really wonderful thing about NLP is that where even psychotherapies are kind of the same thing. They focus on, well, what the problem is, and people rehash the, well, what went on that wasn't the, you know, childhood issues and all of that, but they keep just sort of re-anchoring whatever the problem was instead of actually coming up with positive steps to get somewhere else, to actually change that behavior. And NLP is focused on results. So the primary difference between the psychotherapies and the NLP technology. What I'd like to do, if we've got time to do it, is instead of just talking about, how do you review, revise, and recommit, especially the revise part, is do an NLP process.
I'd love to do a process.
Today. Okay. We can probably get through this in less than 10 minutes, if that works.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to grab a subject from my office?
Well, we don't necessarily have to do it that way, because everybody out in your audience has something that they'd like to work on, something that didn't go as well as what they would have wanted to happen.
Okay, good. So instead of focusing on somebody else, they can focus on their own issue, and they can pick something and get it in their head of what they want. That sounds great. Okay, so... what do we want to refer to this process as?
Okay, well, it's in NLP, it's called a six-step reframe. And as part of the review, revise, and recommit, there's the first idea of it is that, well, you want to take a good look at what did happen. And, you know, as you get whatever it is you want to work on today, notice how quickly you run through the whole thing like a movie in your head that has sound and smells and tastes and feelings attached to it, and you like run that movie from the beginning all the way through to the end. So get whatever it is that's the thing you'd like to work on to have different or better in the future, which is the whole point of review, revise, and recommit. Just let me check. So has everybody got one? I'm just giving you a moment to make sure you do. Because the thing about these processes is that if you think about it like in a general kind of way, it's not very effective. If you actually put yourself in the picture, though, get something specific to work on, like a specific event, then we can actually do some work with it. So as you do run it from the beginning to the end, that's good because you're right at the end of that movie. And what we want to do now is, having had that experience, if you could step off to the side. I've got a noise on my phone. You're still with me, right?
Yes, I am. We're all here, waiting with bated breath.
You step off to the side and you look back and you notice that you've run that movie from the beginning to the end. And what you want to do is get in touch. I want to get in touch with the creative part of you. And the creative part just comes up with ways of creating solutions to things. It has really great ideas. It's just a very creative part. And creative part, you know, whatever happened and the way it happened, if you were able to run it back, like whatever happened in the past happened the way it did happen, but in a way it's kind of a myth. What if you could just go back and change the way it occurred for you? And if you were able to go back in time, give your younger self a resource that you didn't have then but you do have now, creative part, I want you to come up with at least one way you could have done that differently that would have preserved the benefits of the way you did it before. Because you did whatever you did for some good reason, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
And what, so Heather, you got something you're working on?
Yes.
Okay. What's the positive intent and purpose of the way you did it before?
To protect myself from failing.
Okay. Most often it's going to be some sort of protection, and often people will go, well, there's no positive purpose to it. It didn't work. It wasn't a good thing to have. It wasn't a good behavior. I don't want it anymore. But when you really begin to look at it, there is always a positive intent and purpose for any behavior that you've had, because you wouldn't have had the behavior if you weren't trying to do something that was positive. So it doesn't mean that you got the result you wanted. It just means that there was some positive intention of it. So as you get whatever that was, like protection, the next step of this is let's come up with at least one way it could have occurred differently. You could have done something different. The event could have happened differently, or you just learned a different learning from it. So you can do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you do that, what's a different way you could have done what you did?
Well, maybe I didn't have to spend as much money. I could have found another less expensive way to reward myself.
Excellent. And in that case, you just want to notice, well, how does it feel if you had done it that way instead? Something would have shifted and changed, and you just want to notice internally to you, well, what's different about having it have worked out that way? And I don't even need to know the answer to that. Just everyone know for yourself what it was. And then we're going to have you get at least, I want to talk to the creative part again. What's one other way you could have done whatever you did the first time through? Give yourself some resource you didn't have then, but you didn't have now. And if you could give that resource to that younger you, what would that be?
Mm-hmm.
Got another one?
Yeah, I could have probably just, well, I could have avoided spending at all. I mean, I guess that would have been an option, too.
There's another option. And we want to get three. There's something magical about the number three. So what's one other way that you could have done whatever you did before from some other way of being, or do it a different way? What else could you shift about how you did it?
One other thing that I could have done different.
I'm sometimes it can be that you, if the way you viewed the other people involved in it, if you viewed them from a more positive light, or if the other person had more resources than they actually did have, sometimes if it's an issue with parents, we go way back sometimes to whatever events were in your past. What if you had different parents?
Wow.
That would have been different. I mean, you can pick anything you want out of this. You could have had, if there
I
was
think
a
if I just would have been so attached to what other people thought of me, like if I wouldn't have been, if I wouldn't have been so attached, then and I wasn't afraid of being perceived as a failure, then I probably wouldn't have went way overboard to look to spend money that I didn't have to look like I wasn't when I was, you know, I mean, as I look at it, I probably shouldn't have been so caught up in that.
I appreciate your being willing to share that, because sometimes the things that come up for us of, boy, I really did think about it that way, or I really did hold it that way, and boy, why did I do that? Well, here's the big thing. Instead of beating yourself up with it, get the resource. How does it, as you run the movie now, imagine for a moment you've got at least three resources that you weren't really getting access to before. And you're going to run the movie that you ran all the way through to the end before. You're going to reverse it really fast. Let all the frames of the movie, the colors run together and the voices go backwards all the way to the beginning. And you're going to give that younger you these new resources. In your case, the last one was just a sense of not being so attached to what other people thought or felt. And you run the movie again, noticing now, from the beginning all the way through to the end, noticing the changes in what occurs as you now have these resources intact for you. And you know the brain works quicker than you think. So as you get all the way through to the end of the movie, just notice for yourself what's different.
Well, I'm much more self-confident.
Excellent. Excellent.
And those new resources are almost going to ensure my success instead of being the things that deliberately created the failure I was trying to avoid.
Excellent. And I think you've got everything you need to have that occur differently in your future from now on. You've got a different place of looking from it, a different way of feeling about it. The downside of whatever did happen, it's just not likely to go that way again in the future. Now, some people will go and have added these resources to the end of their movie, and you'll go inside and check. So go inside and check, is it totally satisfying to you now? So that you know you have the resources in place. If you find that it's not totally satisfying yet, it may be a lot better than it was, and that would be significant all by itself. But for now, what you would want to do is give yourself some other new resource, some other way you could have done it that would have been different than the way you did it the first time, that would still preserve the benefit of protecting you and whatever other positive intention the behavior had got protected. And you just run the movie again with these new set of resources. So you talk to the creative part, get the resource, give it to the younger you, run the movie again. And if you do this a couple of times, you'll come to a place where it's just totally done for you. And I think that's the place where it is for you right now. Heather, so I want to check back with you. Is it just totally done for you?
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting that, you know, as I, you know, when you broadcast, you got 80 million things going on. And it was amazing that that was the particular thing that I zeroed in on, because it was so long ago. And although that, you know, I have overcome financial obstacles in my life to a degree now that I'm able to teach that to other people, it's interesting to me that when I was thinking back, because, you know, especially when we were in class trying to look for something, I'm like, well, you know, I don't think I have any more problems, you know, and it was always so hard to come up with something to work on. Okay, you know, I got punctuality, I got neatness, I got like all these things that I wanted to work on. And then, you know, after you start solving all of these things, and then like they, because they don't become issues, you can't even see them anymore. It's kind of amazing when you look back.
Yeah.
At least that's how powerful NLP has been to me. It's very interesting to me that this particular thing is my mind was wandering because I was, you know, quasi-distracted. I'm listening to you. I'm running the soundboard. I've got chats going on. There's people walking outside the studio in the hallway. And it's interesting that that particular issue was the one that came up because,
you know,
it had to do with when I was a stockbroker and, you know, making money and the whole fake it till you make it, that sort of mentality. And I was doing all of the things that created my poverty, not my wealth, but I wasn't aware of that. But it's interesting that that particular moment came up. Even though I feel like, you know, and obviously my bank accounts now reflect that I've overcome that and I've created stability financially for myself. But it was interesting, you know, with everything going on, that was the one thing.
I run into this with corporate clients as well, that you've got high-functioning teams. And when you really look at it, though, there's a kind of a danger to intervening or creating change inside a high-functioning team or a high-functioning individual. And, you know, it could get worse.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's worse.
Well, I hope I don't lose all my money now that you said that.
Well, here's what happens, though, is no matter how you get...
I live right across the street from a big mall. That doesn't bode well for after work today, Bill. Thanks a lot.
And you've definitely reached a point of prosperity where you could have whatever you want there and be responsible for whatever you have and whatever you get. So I know you have that pattern in place. What I was going to say with the corporate clients, though, is that no matter how high-functioning they are, there's still a gap between how much they're accomplishing now and what's possible for them to accomplish. So there's what you found is a little step or a little bit farther out into the gap than you were before. So you got that advantage. And that's what what this process does. It's a way that you could run through whatever thing that you're reviewing. At the end of the day, you look back on it, you reviewed it, but you didn't just not learn from it and you didn't dwell on it. You actually did something with it to shift it or change it. So it's revised now. So you have a revised view of the way things occurred in the past. And now the question is, well, in fact, there's one step more step, imagining the future so that you can take the resources that you just gained and actually put them in some future event like the mall. So you leave work and you either choose to go to the mall or not go to the mall. And whatever you choose, you choose it with the resources that you've gained today. What occurs differently in that moment, in that future?
Well, I'm able to walk past the fancy boutiques and keep my money in my wallet as I look for something organic to eat instead.
Excellent. So there's a different thought there. And as you check for yourself internally, what feels different about how you're approaching it than it would have years ago?
Well, now I feel empowered when I say no, because there's a mindset that I have observed in myself and in others as I evaluated their credit and debt structure and when they start to go down this cycle. And what I have observed consistently as a theme throughout people with regard to money is when you have it and you're responding to it appropriately, that ability to say no gives you more strength. And so the more strength you have, the more you say no and the more you resist, and not in a negative way in the sense that you're denying yourself, but in a way that you're saying, well, you know, yeah, I could get it, I can afford it, but do I really need it? And now you're evaluating the particular acquisition for what it is. Do I really need this item? Is it essential to my living, breathing? No. Is it going to pay the mortgage tomorrow? No. Is it going to make me better at paying the mortgage? Probably not. You know, is it going to take away my resources to pay the mortgage? Probably so. And so then you can look at it a little differently. But one of the things that I used to do, and it's so funny that it works this way, the way the brain works. And when I had mentioned it to a girlfriend, she's like, oh, my gosh, that's totally me. And then around the room it went. And then I would see this as a recurrent theme for clients when they were trying to buy a home and they were completely overextended, and then they try to justify their overextension. But when money gets tight or that scarcity mentality comes up, I think to compensate for that, the people, especially the people that have a high need for material objects to make them feel secure and safe, will go out and spend more. I noticed that when money was tight for me, I would find myself going through every drive-through because it was cheap. So in my mind, all right, well, I'm having cheap food, but, you know, even though times are tough, I still got to eat. But, you know, I didn't need to be eating like 4 Big Macs a day, you know, for my health. I could have bought one 35-cent banana and accomplished a lot more.
Yeah. So you've gone out into the future and you've actually seen yourself in a future where if you had the old behavior, it wouldn't be giving you the result that you want. And the question now is, well, what would you rather have? And even for the moment where you evaluated what the pros and cons were of purchasing, this step I think is critical, that you pat yourself on the back. Give yourself the reward. I mean, put your right hand up over your left shoulder. I think most people in your audience can do that. And bear with me, pat yourself on the back. I mean, literally, physically, pat yourself on the back. Notice
Hello?
How that feels. And pat yourself on the back and notice how that feels. Not sure
it's great. I'm not a technical issue.
Because you want to, it's called conditioning. Pavlov's dogs. Pat yourself on the back. Let yourself have the rewards for making the choice that you is really going to give you what you do want in your life. And you will begin to let that reward fill up the space of the doing things that you used to do in order to get love, in order to get whatever, satisfied in order to whatever, that really wasn't going to get you where you wanted to go. So I think this is a really important piece of review, revise, and recommit. So the next question is pretty direct. Well, what are you committed to doing as you move into your future now that you have these new resources in place?
Well, you know, to be able to make better evaluations.
Excellent.
You know. To make considerations before I take action. So
yeah.
That's my value. That's my value.
And it may be a little bit different answer to that question for everybody in your audience. So congratulate yourself and congratulations for allowing yourself to go through this process with me and actually
absolutely
reward yourself with sound effects.
I love my soundboard. So, but no, truly, you do deserve applause. You are a real champion of the human condition with regard to excellence, and I think that's considerable. I'd like to throw another challenge at you that may not necessarily be failure-related. So, in review, revise, and recommit, what we're doing is we do a quarterly checkup, if you will, about how we have managed our savings and spending plan. A, did we stick to it? Did we not stick to it? Did we make progress? Did we have any interruptions or catastrophic events that maybe took us off of that? And have we bounced back yet from it? If not, why? And let's just say, what kind of tools or patterns can we create for ourselves We've done everything right. We created our pattern. We planned our work. We worked our plan, as my dad would say, plan your work, work your plan. And here we are 3 months later. I look back. I did everything I was supposed to do. And even though I did everything I was supposed to do and it was perfect, I'm still a long way from where I want to go. How do I continue to keep that momentum up? And how do I recommit with more fire and energy than ever before? And you know, I know what I would say, but I want to hear what you say first, and then we'll see if we match. But yeah. But how does somebody stay motivated? They've done a ton of work. They've made tremendous strides, but they're looking, you know, they're looking back. They've come a pretty good distance, but when they look forward and they see where the goal is, they're like, holy crap, I've still got a long way to go. How do we inspire those people to dig in for another 6 months or, you know, 3 months or 6 months? It's 3 till the next review point, but let's say the goal is 6 months out or 12 months out still from where we are. Let's say it's for elimination of debt or something. And they've done great so far, but how do we keep them still up?
I actually had a few thoughts about that one, too. The first one was it's really, and you're at a place in your process of the keys that you've already set goals. And the first thing is, well, how well have you set those goals? You may need to go back and revisit for yourself what goals you have and how much have you allowed yourself to imagine a future inside of which those goals have so totally been realized for you that you get to take that deep breath, look around, feel the sun on your shoulders, and look around at the shining faces of the people and the relationships in your life, and just know that you've accomplished something really powerful. And the reason I'm talking about that piece of it is it's the biggest thing that's going to keep you motivated all the way along, because when people start losing momentum, it's either that they've gotten enticed by some other criteria. Things come up in life. They just do. And we sometimes get a little sidetracked. Sometimes we have negative thoughts. There's a lot of things that can happen. And just being able to get back to the place where you have so fully experienced the outcome that you do want, that you can reconnect with it, reignite the process, reignite the pattern, reignite yourself from any place along the way, because you already have created the future and you're continuing to live from the future you already created. Now, you listen to these words and you're getting some idea what I'm talking about, and what do you mean, live from your future? Well, what is reality? Reality is what we say it is when you get right down to it, and we can have a long discussion about how the quantum physics of it works. As far as we can tell, we create reality, and to the extent that you're creating your own reality, the more that you have it anchored in for yourself about what it is you want, the easier it's going to be to get back on target with it. And you do want to have some way of checking back with yourself, reviewing, revising, and recommitting on an ongoing basis on the way there, because people sometimes lose it. The track is filled with people who got almost to the big breakthrough and quit. So there's something about the perseverance and sticking with it and just being able to not give up when others would. And a lot of that is just personal. Dig a little deeper. Get into the resources that are there. And there's something about if you're having those thoughts that, and there's an emotion attached to it, well, it's okay to have your emotions. It's okay to have those thoughts. You just don't want to keep dwelling on the thoughts. You take a look at them. If there's something you can do about it, commit, shift your thoughts, shift your feelings, and let yourself get reconnected to the future you say you want.
That's great. And we do a lot with in our dreams with deadlines, key using imagery to really supplant our goals. I'm just so grateful that my path brought me to you because you took my experience in NLP to the completely next 10 levels, not just a level up, but you exponentially increased awareness and my ability to use it in my everyday life and for the benefit of others. So I am very to you for that. Thanks again for being a part of this show. You have a great weekend, and we will have more for all of you after this. Stay tuned.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success, with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
That was great.
Whoopee! Hip, hip, hooray! Yip, yip, yay! We are just one key away from finishing this round of the Keys to Riches, and I'm so excited to bring to you the three R's this week. And the three R's is review, revise, and recommit. Now, I personally feel that this is the power key out of all of them, because here is where we derive our strength, our intestinal fortitude, and our gumption to keep moving forward, because as we know, long-term goals are difficult to achieve. It's hard to stay focused. It's hard to stay motivated. And most specifically, it's hard to stay on the plan and to make sure that you're on that path. And it's so easy for us to become distracted. Now, I personally feel that this is a power key, because here is where we derive all of our strength and our intestinal fortitude in that to stay dug in and keep going, because long-term goals are difficult to achieve. They're so far off. They're out there in the distance, and it's tough to stay excited and motivated for a while, and especially when we get taken off our game. As we talked last week about forget the perfection principle, sometimes things can interrupt our path and take us off our game. And the beauty of review, revise, and recommit is these three R's blended together give us what we need to get refocused, revitalized, re-energized, and recommitted to that cause. You know, I always have said this, and, you know, I notice this in my personal life and in my professional life and in others, and you would never let somebody deliberately knock you off course. But it's so easy to be nudged in the wrong direction. Now, couple last week's key of forget the perfection principle with review, revise, and recommit. And here now, we have the opportunity to catch ourselves before we get knocked deliberately off track. If we've been nudged, here's our chance to catch it before it becomes a problem. Like they said on the Andy Griffith Show, you got to nip that in the bud. And so that's what we're doing here. We're identifying where we were, how far we've come, and whether or not the distance and the progress that we've made has been in line with our goals. Now, additionally, you know, that's the review portion. Okay, here is our goal. And we start first with our Dreams with Deadlines goal worksheet that we did. And in that, we listed all of our wants, needs, hopes, desires, and dreams. and we attached timelines to those. And so now there's our roadmap. So we've got, you know, where our destination is, and we've got our map to get there. What we need to do is monitor our progress along that path. Have we strayed from the path? Have we stayed on the path? How far along did we get? Did we get further than we expected? Did we fall short because we had issues that got in the way? In any case, we identify where we are along the path from the last time that we made our revisions, okay? And the last time we took and made a review, we made notes and we said, okay, this is where we started. This is where we've arrived thus far. And here's the important part. And this is where diets fail and typical budgeting fails. And as you know, here on this show, we break the budget. We don't even fool around with that. We create a healthy savings and spending plan. But this second key is vital, or the second part of this key, the second R in review, revise, and recommit, because revision is necessary. Diets fail because, especially fad diets, because they have one goal and one goal only, and that is to drop a ton of weight all at once. And so you do that, you drop a ton of weight all at once. But over time, diet becomes ineffective, and then maybe you start losing ground, or you wind up gaining weight, or you gain more weight than when you did the diet to begin with. And the reason why is we're trying to create balance in our bodies. And when you do crash diets, yes, you can alter the system and manipulate it in such a way to achieve a particular short-term result. However, long-term, it takes the body so far out of balance in the other direction, like a pendulum swinging. Okay, so you got out of balance and you gained weight. So now you did this crash diet and then the pendulum swung the other way. We got balance, but we kept on going because we thought, ooh, well, we'll just knock off a couple extra pounds since we're doing so good. And then before you know it, the pendulum swings in the other direction and we're out of balance again. And what's it going to want to do? It's going to drop back and swing again. And we're trying to get into that middle central area of balance where we're not too much either way, but we're right on our path. And this applies also with budgeting and financial planning. And budgeting doesn't work because it creates certain extremes, and they're not designed for long-term success. They're designed to accomplish a particular goal, whether it's debt reduction, whether it's savings, whatever it might be. It's set up for a particular goal, but because it doesn't create balance and harmony in your life, and I'm not just talking dollar amount in the bank, but there's a lot of emotion and mental patterns and programming and personal beliefs that keep us from being successful long-term at that, because it doesn't allow us what we need to achieve balance. And this is about financial balance. And so revision is necessary in order to create and keep harmony with our healthy savings and spending plan. Additionally, revision is necessary not just for that reason, but things change. What did we learn last week? The only thing that's constant is inconsistency. And we learned that because some things out of our control influence our lives and become something that affect us in a certain way, like the birth of an unexpected child, the death of an income-producing spouse, the need to care for an indigent parent. All of these things come at us. Life throws zingers, and you just never know what you're going to get other than you're going to get something. And because we can't quite anticipate that, but then when we know we're not just knocked off our game, but this is something where we're going to have to make a lifestyle adjustment, so too we need to make a financial adjustment in our budget. And that's where the revision portion of this key comes in, and that's why it's so important, because what started out working for us when we were a single bachelor or bachelorette may not fit us anymore after we have a child or have to care for an indigent parent. And our lifestyle changes and our roles change. And so, too, our healthy savings and spending plan must change in order for it to remain healthy and vital and vibrant. And that's what's so important, because when you make that review and you go, yeah, 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 you know, I've gotten pretty far, and then you say, okay, so the next revision, yeah, yeah, or the next review, yeah, 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 I've gotten, well, I didn't get quite as far as the first time. And then by the third review, you're like, wow, like I almost feel like I'm losing ground, like I'm not getting where I'm going. And that's because that second portion, revision, is so vital to the three R's, because you've got to assess where you have come, and then you have to make changes, if necessary, in order to achieve financial independence. You may have to adjust your goals or timelines, or you may have to figure out how to take on additional expenses. Whatever it might be, that revision section of this key is vital, because this is where you'll be able to create the balance in your life. Once you know you have to make a change, you can do that. But if you keep moving forward and you've got this new thing in your life and you don't accommodate for that, not just emotionally, because that's tough when you have to take on the care of an indigent parent, or if, you know, you lose your spouse suddenly and all of a sudden you're thrust into the workforce. These are major, major things for us. We lose our jobs, or, you know, our company starts having problems. I mean, there's a myriad of things that can go on, and we need to adjust our financial plan accordingly. Now, once we accomplish that, then the next thing that we need to focus on is the third part of this key. And these keys, like reading, writing, and arithmetic, they are so important as a trio. They work as a trinity, okay? So it's review, revise, and the proof is in the pudding when we recommit, okay? Initially, when we started through this in the first key, and in an affirmation, we made a commitment to ourselves to move forward. In our second key, we took action and we made assessment and we started cruising through things. So when we make our quarterly assessment and we make our review, we determine any revisions that need to be necessary, we need to look again at those long and midterm goals and recommit ourselves, get our energy levels up, get our vibration up in this universe so we attract the things we most desire: financial independence, stability, a foundation for our family, okay? These are the things that will help facilitate all of that other success in our lives if we can get our financial house in order, because it's a symbiotic balance. You can't have one thing without the other. You've got to create harmony. And making a commitment to the process is so for us here. And so that's why I put the three R's together: review, revise, and recommit. Because financial independence is a long way away. You know, there is no golden lottery tickets that's gonna make your life balance. Because even when we have windfalls, they create other issues and can knock us out of balance. So this key is vital. And we do it quarterly because that gives us enough time to get some momentum, but it doesn't allow us to go too far without doing a review to make sure that we're still on that right path. So I love this key because this is the key that makes the difference in our success or failure, because everybody can start out budgeting well. But the key is, how do we do this long term? Well, we create a healthy savings and spending plan. And part of that plan isn't just the plan itself, but it's the continual revision, the review, the revision, the improvement, and the recommitment to that plan. It's a constant state of motion and change. Life changes. Whether or not you change, tomorrow is going to be different than today, and today is different from yesterday. And knowing that, you have to move with it. You can wake up and say, I'm not going to change, but that doesn't stop change. And life is going to move without you. and you need to stay a part of that evolution and that ebb and flow of life. And the review, revise, and recommit key allows us to do that successfully. Be on the forward curve of our lives. Last week we talked about being proactive as opposed to reactive to our situations. And we talked about forgiveness and repatterning when we have issues. And here at Review, Revise, and Recommit, this is our chance to identify maybe some debilitating patterns that we may have that are self-destructive, and we need to reframe those, and we'll talk about that. We talked about that with Bill Thomason, is reframing how things happen to us, and then make a new commitment. Starting now, I am recommitted to my financial future. I may have had a few bumps along the way. That's where forget the perfection principle comes in. But it doesn't matter because I've created a new plan. I've augmented my plan that I started. So now I know I can be more successful with it because things in my life have changed. So I, too, must change my plan. And then I'm going to commit. I'm going to get fired up, and I'm going to say, here and now, I'm taking charge of my financial independence, and I'm committing to these goals that I have just reviewed and revised as necessary. So this week's key statement, I know you're all waiting for this, a truly successful financial plan is like a flower garden. It must be tended to regularly, or weeds will grow, or flowers will wither and die. Continual evaluation and adjustment is necessary in order to achieve our mid- and long-term financial goals. This is a long key statement this week. A truly successful financial plan is like a flower garden. It must be tended to regularly, or weeds will grow, or flowers will wither and die. Continual evaluation and adjustment is necessary in order to achieve our mid- and long-term financial goals. Our key affirmation this week, it's a good one, I'm telling you, because I came up with it, isn't that fabulous? For those of you that are just joining us for the first time, in addition to being welcome to the broadcast, our affirmation section is what empowers us and creates new patterns for us to become successful financially because we are operating as if it's already happening. And what we do is we help to convince that crummy little curmudgeon who is negative in our saboteur that lives inside of us, the guy that makes us do things that are not in our best interest. And so what we're doing is we're trying to convince him otherwise that we are worthy of and capable of exacting these goals and creating financial independence. And so we do that throughout the day. It starts in the evening before bed. The last thing we look at before we go to bed is we read our affirmations out loud. It tells our subconscious mind, I need you to work on this while I am resting and recuperating my body. And help me come up with new pathways to create financial independence. So then first thing in the morning, at the forefront of our vision, we reread those goals so our conscious mind takes these in. And now we've got our conscious and our unconscious paired and working together in harmony to create our financial independence. And then the next time we read these affirmations is any time throughout the day when we encounter negativity or naysayers or people who are trying to take us away from or off our financial goals. We won't lose sight of them because we're going to stay positive and we're going to reaffirm our success and our abilities. So today's key affirmation is I am successful at evaluating and adjusting my financial plan. I am successful at evaluating and adjusting my financial plan. So add this one to your list of affirmations you should have, in addition to any personal affirmations that you've written through our affirmation segment. You should have 12 of these puppies that I've given you every week, in addition to the ones you came up with yourself. You've got one more, and then we start all over again. I'm so excited. So in addition to our key affirmation, finally, our key action item, okay, this is my challenge to you over the next week. It's that time again to perform our quarterly review. So pull out all your worksheets, pull out your savings and spending plan, your tracker, and go through everything and one by one address where we are, address where we have been the last 3 months, and say, will this work for the next 3 months, or do I have additional issues that I need to address and change my plan for the future? And once we do that, we're going to sing, we're going to dance, we're going to celebrate, we're going to do cartwheels, whatever it is that makes you happy, and recommit ourselves to our goal of financial independence. So that's all for this week. How are you all doing on your Summer of Savings Challenge? For those of you who are not familiar with the Summer of Savings Challenge, it is a personal challenge from me to you to try to save during the craziest, hottest, and spendy next to Christmas season that there is. So for more information, visit our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com and click on our Savings and Spending Challenge. If you want to participate, please type in your information and hit the send key. You will receive your personal challenge letter. You will receive your commitment certificate, and we will start tracking your success. If you're interested in participating in the show, if you are one of the lucky people that are able to employ the techniques that we discuss here on the show and have success, we want to hear your story. So it's kind of a little challenge. It's like an informal competition. And for those that have been able to make dramatic results, we want to feature your successes on the show. We also want to talk about some of the challenges that you had along the way and how you used the keys to overcome those issues. So again, www.unlockyourwealth.com. Subscribe to the e-zine at e-zine@unlockyourwealth.com or follow us on Twitter and get those daily money tweets at UnlockYRWealth. Thanks again for joining us this week. And holy cow, we're wrapping up the first month of our Summer of Savings. June is almost out of here. Next broadcast, we will be back live in studio in the fabulous Scottsdale, Arizona, where we are going to be celebrating our Financial Independence Day in addition to our country's Independence Day. So if you're looking forward to declaring your financial independence, I will see you next week on air at Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.